Distant Dog Barking, Episode 3, written by D.D. McWolf. The baby had been kicking throughout the night, almost in perfect unison to the outbursts in the streets below, and Kaylee had barely slept a wink. She imagined the poor little thing was intuiting the unrest and resisting its eventual birth into such hellish circumstances. Kaylee was just grateful she still had another 7 weeks left in her third trimester. Nevertheless, she'd been rigid with fear all night, and her hands and feet were ice cold, despite the bed being cozy and Ryan giving off so much heat. Of course, he'd slept soundly, regardless of his diatribe yesterday that this unrest was now serious and past the tipping point into meltdown, or worse, the beginning of the end, and the bug-out time was finally here. It really wasn't what a mother-to-be wished to hear from her husband. To add insult to injury, he'd piled up furniture in front of the window in case a stray bullet should hit the building. Ryan was an obsessive prepper, and for 2 years he'd been teaching her survival skills and dragging her to a 3-gun training facility up in Custer every month. They even had matching bug-out bags, but weirdly, that had only exacerbated her uneasiness, and now that it looked like they might need to use that gear and apply those skills, she felt annoyed by the whole prepper ethos, as though it had somehow manifested the collapse like a self-fulfilling prophecy of the common psyche. She felt sick to her stomach, lying here now. As a 90s child adopted by aging second-generation Koreans, this was not the stability and prosperity she'd grown up believing America represented. And then, to top off the finality of all this upside-downness, her big brother Chris, who was on the verge of completing his 4 years with the Army, was suddenly redeployed to the National Guard 2 days ago to enforce martial law. Late last night he'd called to say Homeland Security was planning to lock down the central metropolitan area, so he wanted to pick her and Ryan up in the morning and get them out of the city to his double-wide up in May Creek. He felt they'd be safe there, and if the troubles pushed out that far, they could always bug out further into Wallace State Forest, which literally lay right behind the trailer. Ryan was excited by Chris's plan, partly because he loved Wallace Forest, but also he'd been worried about how to safely get Kaylee out, being that she was so pregnant. She knew that Ryan feared they'd left it too late, and that she was the reason they hadn't already fled the city. So for them both, this was a serendipitous teleporting to safety. Ryan stirred beside her, and she saw him gently wake. She could tell from his eyes that he'd forgotten for a moment the shitstorm Seattle had succumbed to. Then, as he came to focus on her face and the fear she harbored, he clearly recalled and blinked to punctuate a stream of invading thoughts. "You okay, sweetie?" he asked. "Not really," Kaylee replied. "Don't worry about anything. We'll be fine, I promise." "What time's Chris coming?" Ryan queried in his best comforting tone. "I don't know. He said this morning as early as he could get here. We need to get up and be ready." A light tap on the door redirected their attention, and the dog barked a string of warnings to whomever was on the other side. "That'll be Chris," Kaylee blurted, urgently pulling aside the comforter and swinging her legs out of the bed. Ryan jumped up. "I'll let him in," he said, striding quickly to the door. "Hold Finbag. You know he doesn't like Chris," Kaylee shot after him. She felt a rush of nausea and a lightheadedness as she sat up, and bracing herself with her hands, she hung her head to take a moment to breathe. Finn, come here," she could hear Ryan order as he tried to grab the dog's collar. "One second, Chris, let me just get Finn under control." She heard Ryan unlatching the deadbolt and Finn's nails scratching the floor as he barked louder than normal. It didn't sound right. Finn didn't like Chris, but that sounded more aggressive. Kaylee opened her mouth to say, "Ryan, wait," when an ear-ringing boom ran out, causing her to instinctively duck. Then another boom and another. Through the bedroom doorway, she could just see Ryan's head and shoulders hit the floor and roll toward the sofa, and then Finn let out a yelp as though stung by a sudden pain. Another gunshot. Kaylee was now in adrenalized automation. She pivoted off the bed and slipped a sub-2009mm from between the box spring and mattress. It was already unfolded, and she lowered the charging handle quietly and stepped up to the bedroom door with the rifle to her shoulder, safety off. As she moved into view of the apartment door, she saw Ryan on the floor and a man closing the apartment door behind himself, with his back to Kaylee, seemingly not expecting anyone else to be home. She aligned the iron sights to his upper thorax and waited for a second to hear the door latch. As he turned back, he suddenly saw her and began raising his pistol in what felt like slow motion, but she had the jump on him and fired 2 shots in quick succession. She couldn't see the bullet's impact on his black clothing and face mask, but the white door behind them sprayed red, twice, signifying two through-and-through hits. He didn't flinch or react. He simply fell back like a board and crumpled against the door. At that second, another man exited from the kitchen and instantly fired a badly aimed shot at Kaylee as soon as he saw her. She turned and shot him twice, too, around the collarbone. But after he fell, he screamed and writhed on the floor. Kaylee went over and, within a safe 10 feet, shot him once in the back of the head. Wow, she thought. A lot of blood. Then she saw Finn, also dead still on the floor, beside that second intruder. Without fully registering the death around her, nor her part in it, Kaylee stood for a few seconds in detached indifference. Notwithstanding two of the bodies were her life and love, she felt as though she had just watched your average shootout on your average TV show or movie and was neither a key player nor a fortunate survivor. The loud monotone hum in her ears added to the disconnect, like someone on a leaf blower outside your window when you're trying to concentrate. Then the baby kicked, hard, and all reality re-entered her veins with the full-bore pain and horror and grief of the scene around her. Still the leaf-blower audio, but the message was visually loud and clear. She dropped the carbine and stepped to Ryan, who lay on his side against the base of the sofa, with his head on the wooden floor, eyes half open and wearing a peaceful expression, in a pool of his own blood. A circular puncture in his right cheek had delivered a thin rivulet of blood directly across his nose to the floor, and were it not for that, he'd simply be resting. How could she erase the wound? Where was Control-Z? She pulled him gently over onto his back, and she could see there was no question that he was gone. His eyes had begun to dry, and his blood was not running anymore, and water droplets began to spatter his unflinching face before Kaylee realized they were hers, streaming down her cheeks onto his. She lifted his head onto her lap as she knelt beside him and carefully closed his eyes one at a time with her forefinger and then kissed each eyelid, and the grief welled up uncontrollably from within to trigger a waterfall onto his face and neck as she sobbed. She sobbed and sobbed. And the baby stilled, as though knowing to let its mother grieve the passing of the father it had never now meet. The door bursting open spun Kaylee around, and she released a yelp in renewed fear until she saw Chris's face staring down at her, mouthing indiscernibly as though underwater, clutching his sidearm tightly in his right hand. He slammed the door behind him and stood pointing his pistol back and forth between the intruders on the floor as though they might still, perhaps, be alive. Fuck, Kaylee. What the fuck? What the fuck happened here? Are you hurt? Fuck! Without waiting for an answer, he pulled the hood off the first man by the door and patted him down for an ID, which he took and pocketed, then repeated the same with the second man. He then paused and knelt beside Finn to clap him gently on the ribcage. Through eyes blurry with tears, Kaylee could see Chris utter something, perhaps a farewell to the dog that disliked him so much, and as he stood and looked to her, she gestured to her right ear. "I can't hear anything, Chris. I can't hear you," she sobbed. He nodded, went back to the door and deadbolted it, then knelt with her alongside Ryan's body. He put his arm around her and pulled her in close to the crook of his neck, forcing her face to turn away from Ryan. He put his lips right up to her ear and spoke softly, but firmly. "I will come back for Ryan, okay? I promise I will come back for Ryan this evening. But we have to go now. Whatever you need, grab it. We need to go. Right now." She nodded as she sobbed into his collar. "Is Finn dead?" she asked. "Yes," Chris replied. "They're both gone, sis. But I'm going to take you away from this right now and come back tonight for Ryan and Finn, okay?" She nodded again, sobbing harder now as though permitted to do so by Chris's assurance, and she put her hands tightly around his neck as she resigned to this fresh hell. Outside, a Humvee idled on the sidewalk right up against the door to Kaylee's building, and as the building door opened, a grunt in battle rattle opened both the front and rear curbside doors. Chris exited quickly with Kaylee, his arm in a blanket around her shoulders, and helped her into the back seat. He squeezed her bug-out bag onto the floor at her feet, along with a trash bag full of clothes and other belongings, and handed her a bottle of water he'd filled from her kitchen tap. "Lie down and drink this," he told her, before closing the door and climbing into the front passenger side. The grunt hopped behind the wheel, made a U-turn, and roared off down the trash-littered road. "Kelly, this is Private Patterson. Patterson, this is my sister." "Nice to meet you, ma'am," Patterson said politely. Kelly didn't respond, as she hadn't heard any intelligible words to assume that she'd been spoken to, just a mumbling of voices from the front seat. Chris looked back to see Kelly close her puffy, bloodshot eyes and pull the blanket up tight around her neck. He realized she couldn't hear much of anything for the time being and looked back at Patterson with a gesture to talk over the headset and to keep it hush. Patterson pulled the mic down to his lips and switched his intercom to on. "Where's the husband?" he asked in a mumbling voice. Chris motioned low down with his finger, crisscrossing his throat, and shook his head. Patterson knew this meant Ryan was dead and raised his brows to ask how, without speaking. Chris glanced back at Kaylee to see that her eyes were still closed and replied, "I don't think she can hear us. There was a firefight." "Jesus, you shitting me? She hurt?" Patterson gestured, concerned, with a nod to the back seat. "No," Chris replied. "Looks like her husband hit them both before they got him. I'll wait till we get up to the trailer before I ask her what happened," he said, glancing back at Kaylee. "And they shot the fucking dog." "Jesus. Sorry, sir. But how many perps? Were they tweakers?" "I don't think so. Looked weird. Looked like they were targeted," Chris frowned as he recollected the scene. "How many, sir?" "Two." "You recognize them?" "No, but I got their IDs." "Oh, don't get on 5, Patterson. Stay on Madison to 24th. That'll take you to 520, Chris directed. "Yes, sir." Turning left onto Madison at 0748, they could see the street littered with trash and crisscrossed with skewed cars all the way to the highway overpass 600 meters down. It didn't look as though anyone was out and about, despite the curfew having ended at 0700 hours. Chris thought to himself how similar this looked to some of the towns they'd advanced on in Iraq after pushing ISIS out, without, obviously, the raised buildings and smoke plumes of air and artillery bombardments. But Patterson hadn't deployed to theater yet, so this was not something they could reminisce over together, and he could see by Patterson's face that the kid was very unsettled by the disarray. This was something Chris had never thought he'd witness at home, in liberal, foodie, grungy Seattle of all places, a veritable war zone in Hipsterville, and he shuddered to think what he might be required to do whilst following orders in the coming days. Sure, he was a military man, and an E5, and he'd seen combat, but his 4 years had left him unfeeling and detached about the endless war in the Middle East. He had all the cliched doubts about America's role amidst tribal Muslim cultures and the unlikelihood of ever effecting a peaceful resolution in lands where an eye for an eye was a badge of honor. If every act of violence must be repaid with another, any thought of an end to conflict is simply a delusion, he felt. But what about this, here? Now, could this be quelled and peace restored? It had only been a week, but already it seemed past the Rubicon. Acts of willful, mortal violence had been enacted. Christ, to his own family, no less. And that can't be forgotten or erased. If Ryan hadn't killed those fuckers, he would have. Even if it meant hunting them down and ripping their fucking hearts out. 4 years of service and nothing felt, but in this past hour he'd been more infected with loathing, infected with the wrath of an invaded nation, because this was entirely personal. This was family. This was the hate vengeance that filled the hearts of his enemy, that hate toward him and all coalition boots on the ground, because those enemy combatants were brimming with the rage of loss for friends and family members killed directly or as wartime collateral. He'd never understood that. Not to this degree. Fleetingly, when a buddy was KIA, but you didn't get time to sit around and grieve. Your CO made sure of that. And what of the 78 others killed in last night's running battles throughout downtown? Those acts can't be deleted either. And why were those shooters out, with weapons, despite the curfew, if it wasn't to join the fight, to kill? For the climate, really? The tree huggers want to kill people to prove their point, seriously? Were they just random delinquents parasiting off an opportunity to actualize a desire to murder? Perhaps that was more likely. Just people with guns who were angry with the world and the deal they'd been dealt, making the most of a lapse in lawfulness to exact random revenge. Chris nodded to himself at that explanation, but it was poor comfort, and he knew it would take a lot more killing on the military's part before all those murder shooters could be suppressed. And arresting those people was now no longer a directive. Just last night, Brass had changed up the term to FAM. They were no longer American citizens, but fighting-aged males, and Homeland Security had cleared the entire National Guard to use lethal force. What a fugazi. He wasn't sure how he was going to get his head around this one, being that in the last hour alone this had become 100 times more personal than his 2 deployments in the sandbox combined. As they skirted a couple of collided cars, they saw a pair of legs, tits up, sticking out from underneath the front end of the second vehicle, and a long streak of dried blood led to the gutter. Patterson hit the brakes as he saw the body, undoubtedly his first corpse, but Chris motioned to keep rolling. "Don't stop. Don't stop for anything, okay?" "Roger that, sir," Patterson replied gratefully. "Christ, no one going to work. Everything closed, schools closed, stores closed, nothing on the shelves anyway, and there's a body sticking out from under that vehicle, and not a cop in sight. Is this bad or what, sir?"
"Did you just enlist, Patterson?" Chris asked sarcastically. "Last September. It is my first day of active duty, though, sir. I just got back from a family wedding last night. The flights were canceled all week and we couldn't get home from Austin. Ended up driving with my brother after they called Tuesday and told me to report at 0400 this morning."
"Okay, so you missed the shitstorm last night," Chris asked.
"Yeah, we stayed in a motel off Interstate 5. Their cable was out, but the grandma at the front desk said it was a real bad downtown."
"Yeah, it was bad, all right," Chris agreed, recalling his own involvement. Patterson glanced across at Chris.
"Were you there, sir?"
Kaylee lay in a semi-fugue state on the back seat, watching herself from a slightly elevated perspective, her body jostling gently back and forth as the Humvee navigated the slalom of cars and debris on the road outside. She could discern 2 mumbling voices despite the droning growl of the engine, and one of them sounded like her brother's, but the other she didn't recognize. She looked down at this attractive young woman who she did recognize, in abstract at least, and she knew catastrophe had just befallen her, but had trouble mustering empathy or feelings of being able to relate in this precise moment. She supposed she didn't yet have the language or first-hand experience to emotionally understand what she knew this young woman had just endured. Hell, her husband had only minutes ago been murdered. Oh my God. And she was pregnant with their first child. Poor thing. And next month they'd be at a signing for their new home over the bridge in West Seattle. A first for each of them. A home they'd picked out together for their new family. And the dog. And it had a 2-car garage to keep their hybrids charged and out of the weather. The room they'd picked for the nursery was so beautiful, with bay windows and a view. And with a total of 4 bedrooms and 2 full baths, they had room to grow. They'd try for another child later, after this one was 2 years old or so. So much to look forward to. It was a lovely area, actually, with some great restaurants and a high walk score. They were so psyched to move. And they declined to know the baby's gender. They wanted that old-school surprise of birthing the little one into the family home, so they'd bought everything in pink and blue with a good return policy. And Ryan's business had been doing so well, especially since he split with his partner. And she'd just finished her master's and been promoted at work, and their combined incomes meant they'd be really comfortable. It was exciting. And she absolutely loved her job. And her husband, of course. Ryan was a good man, and he was sexually generous. Which was so important in a partner, she felt. Though when they first met, he declared himself bisexual and stated he was not inclined to change. She smiled now, remembering how she persuaded him to commit by proving she could take care of all his proclivities. Though, of course, many of those hadn't been possible during pregnancy, she mused. But in fact, Ryan had just found real professional focus for the first time since she conceived, and he dumped his freeloading business partner and turbocharged the business. But her mother had said all the increased funds were because the baby was a lucky child, due to be born in the year of the monkey, and thereby bringing good fortune from the womb. Kaylee cared little for her mother's generation's superstitions and was tired of luck being a word interchangeable only with the word money, or the word wealth, and never having anything to do with actual hard work. In her mother's mind, good luck could never be associated with intangibles like intellect, or love, or talent,
or health. Always money. And the fact they had plenty of it was due simply to luck, apparently. And its recent increase was due to this lucky baby's pending birth, because it was a lucky little monkey child. And their past successes were because a fortune teller had predicted it, as though the clairvoyant's foresight was somehow the actualizing power, not all the sleepless nights and sheer doggedness, sweat and tears it took to get there. Kaylee didn't get her degree because of her studiousness. She achieved it because the stars were aligned, somehow, according to her mother. And those stars chose to align because the ancestors were pleased, and so cajoled the universe to orchestrate good luck down upon her in the form of a degree, so that she could earn, yes, more money. But then that money could only be earned by luck, apparently, so it didn't make sense at all, and if it wasn't more than just a little annoying, it might actually be a little funny, Kaylee supposed. She and Chris had grown up distinctively middle class, monetarily, but always on the cusp of working class due to their ethnicity. Kaylee always felt Chris had been turned down from West Point because of that, though he claimed his grades weren't good enough, and Mom said it was because he'd been a gangster in a former life and would never, ever know much good luck throughout his current incarnation. Poor Chris. He'd wanted to launch his military career as an NCO, but ended up a grunt. Just like all the working-class kids who did badly in high school and never went to college because they were, well, just too poor. So they end up bullet catchers and crawl up the ranks so slowly that they lose impetus and ambition and succumb to depression and joblessness after the fact. And then her poor brother, all ready to take his discharge and don civvies for an office gig, gets redeployed to whatever this is. Where is this young pregnant woman going? She suddenly wondered. Lying here on the back of this truck seat. As Patterson exited the top of the ramp onto the 520, an SUV sat blocking the right lane with its nose crumpled onto the concrete crash barrier and its driver laying across the hood, clearly having been ejected from the vehicle by the impact. His head was split open on the top of the barrier, and his dried blood and brain stuck to the wall, adhering whilst they slid down and solidifying in the morning sun like spilled tapioca. The SUV was pockmarked with bullet holes, and as Patterson slowed to stare, Chris could read the horror on his green face. Damn, was he about to get manned up. As they rubbernecked on the scene, all of a sudden, Kaylee popped up on the back seat and screamed, causing both soldiers to jump. Ryan! Where's Ryan? Jesus fucking Christ, Patterson grunted. It's okay, Chris soothed. I'm picking him up later, remember? He could see Kaylee was in a heightened state of shock, induced by grief, and that she'd momentarily forgotten Ryan was gone. But he wasn't about to remind her in this moment when they needed this drive out to May Creek to go without a hitch. Once at the trailer, he could remind her of the facts, but they had some distance to cover, and definitely a checkpoint or two, and there could well be more grisly views along the route. He was just glad she'd missed that last one. "Lay down, Kay. You need to lay down," he urged. But she stared at him blankly, not registering their situation nor the necessity of his request. Where are we? Where's Ryan? I'm getting him later, okay? You just lay down and rest. Then looking at her belly, he touched it to draw her attention. You need to rest for the baby. Kaylee heard that and looked down, cupping her stomach in her hands as though cradling a newborn. Then she lay back down on the seat and Chris rearranged the blanket up around her shoulders. What time are you picking him up? She asked, with urgency. Later on, around 9 p.m., okay? I promise. As Chris turned back to face the road, Patterson widened his eyes to express how startled he'd been at her outburst, as if to apologize for his. Chris replied with a knowing nod. This isn't good. No. No citizen should go through this, Chris exclaimed. This is a first for me, too, sir. I've never even seen a dead person. Now I've had two before breakfast. It's a wake-up call, huh? Chris acknowledged. Oh, yeah. I mean, I knew I'd see stuff overseas, but never here. I never thought I'd see this in America. You're gonna see worse than this. You ready for it? I guess I have to be, right? Kind of fuck yeah, Chris replied with a chuckle. Kaylee started a cooing lullaby from the back seat, and the boys looked at each other, then Chris back at her. She had the blanket pulled up over her head and was sobbing gently as she hummed. Is that normal, sir? Patterson asked in a concerned voice. For shock? Oh, yeah. Hell, I've seen battle-hardened tough guys curled up like a ball on the ground in their own piss, sucking their thumbs with their buddy and bloody pieces all around them, Chris replied, eyes wide as he recalled a past event, then realized Patterson was still a battle virgin and shot him a look of, oops. Sorry, Patterson. Hey, no, I get it, sir. Thanks for the visual. You're a wise ass, aren't you, Patterson? That'll get you far, Chris said. Right then, at the outside of a bend, they spotted a roadblock 300 meters ahead, and Patterson let off the gas to slow. Don't slow down. Morse them an MW with the high beam, and they'll open up. Patterson reapplied his boot to the gas pedal and did as Chris instructed. Dash, dash, dot, dash, dash. And immediately they could make out three men running to slide away a wheeled barrier to let them through. Without breaking speed, they blew through the Humvee with the gap at 73 miles per hour, and three young soldiers saluted as they passed. Whoa, I didn't know you could do that, Patterson smiled. What's MW? Meat wagon? Yep, medical emergency. When you're in theater, that is. Wasn't sure if they'd acknowledge it, but I guess they'd all deployed before. In Redmond, they merged off onto Avondale Road, across Novelty Hill to 124th Street, and onto the 203. The whole east side of Redmond looked like any other day, untouched by the chaos, and it was easy to forget for a minute there was anything awry. On 203, the same thing, except there were no cars whatsoever, which made it eerie. But no more bodies, thank Christ. But as soon as they turned onto Route 2, another checkpoint obstructed both lanes, and Chris could make out a gunner at his 50 cal in an Oshkosh HGC behind three HESCO barriers. To the right in the ditch, some kind of civilian vehicle lay on its roof, having clearly bounced off the HESCOs and rolled down the embankment. We'll stop here, he instructed Patterson, gesturing not to flash high beams this time. Yes, sir. As they rolled up on two Joes and Digis, Chris leaned out the window. You ladies having troubles? He yelled and laughed. They looked scared and barely smiled, but saluted. Then their OIC rounded the first HESCO barrier, wiping his mouth with his sleeve, and approached Chris's window. They were the same rank. Hey, Sarge, what the fuck? Is this a serious Charlie Foxtrot we got here or what? We had some nut jobs with AKs trying to blast their way through about 400 hours, and we had to light them up. I don't think they spotted the turret on the HGC back there. Christ, Chris said, looking down to the ditch where the vehicle lay. They must have moved the bodies out of sight, he thought. Did you dead check them? Chris asked with a smile. Ha ha, fuck you. Nah, they were hamburger. McGee hit him with a fitty. Then he vomited. Dumb fuck. I guess he's popped his cherry now. How messed up is this, Sarge? The OSC added, shaking his head in disbelief. I know, right? Who'd have thought we'd see this shit in America? Chris concurred. We passed a couple of Tango uniforms on Route 520. Looks like one got hit with a fitty there, too. Oh, I think that was Rodriguez. He mentioned something about that over the radio. Some dude shot at them with a 40 mic, the OIC said, laughing in disbelief. Jesus, Chris uttered in shared astonishment. So what you douchebags got going on? The OIC asked, craning his neck to look in the back seat. Oh, medical emergency, Chris replied. Shit, we gotta get going. Is this the last CP? Oh, hell yeah, you're good. The OIC kicked the front tire. Why are you faggots driving this spam can? I thought they retired these a decade ago. They did. That's why the National Guard has them, Chris retorted as they pulled away. The OIC laughed. Get the hell out of here and keep your head down. They nodded at each other as Patterson pulled off through the checkpoint and onto the empty road ahead. Get the lead out, Patterson. No more checkpoints. Right before Route 2 crossed to the south side of the Skycomish, Patterson took an abrupt left onto Ryder Road, heading straight up toward the foot of the mountain. After crossing the power line easement to the edge of Wallace Falls Forest, Chris gestured for Patterson to slow right down. The narrow dirt drive was hard to see between two pines, and its curve, once off the road, helped conceal the double-wide perfectly amidst a dense cluster of scrub oaks snug up against the base of the cliff. It was the idyllic bug-out spot, Chris now realized as they pulled in and out of sight amidst the trees. He'd never noticed how perfectly hidden it was. Now especially, the green foliage was almost all grown in. These new and terrifying circumstances were undoubtedly casting a new light on every angle and spurring him to see things differently in terms of security and tactical advantage, and how easy it'd be to evade. Once the trailer came into full view in all its bright, vinyl-sided whiteness, he He realized that this would be safe for now, but once fall came, he'd need to cover that double-wide in a desert camo net to camouflage its profile against the grey-brown dusty rock of the cliff face. Patterson roared up and stopped abruptly, sending a cloud of dust onto the trailer. "That'll dull it down," Patterson offered as he hopped out to open Kaylee's door, but Chris stopped him short. "Take five, Patterson. I'll get her." Patterson walked off behind the cabin to pee and lit a cigarette as he went. Chris quietly opened the rear door on his side at Kaylee's feet and gently touched her ankle. "Kay, we're here. Wake up." She didn't stir, so he jostled her foot. She moaned and instantly resumed her sobbing from before, her bitter grief clearly only on pause for a few minutes of sleep. Chris leant in and pulled her arm to sit her up, then slid her along the seat and out of the vehicle. She pulled the blanket tight up over her head as he retrieved her two bags and coaxed her to walk ahead of him into the house. "Come on, Kay, let's go. You'll be all right." Inside, he closed the door behind them. Belying its redneck exterior, it was actually cozy inside. The perfect bachelor pad. He'd bought it from an old lady who had to sell up to fund her move to senior living closer to Seattle somewhere. And because she couldn't take anything with her, he'd purchased all the original 1970s furnishings along with it, which were in good shape, if a little dog-eared, as clearly they'd been well made from the start, and she'd been a fastidious woman of German origin who'd liked to keep everything shipshape. Apparently she'd passed away a week after she moved, sadly, probably from a broken heart, but Chris was nevertheless grateful she hadn't died in situ, as his half-Korean DNA made him a tad superstitious, and he'd never have bought it with a ghost ensconced. Chris walked Kaylee to the bedroom in the back and rolled her into the neatly made queen-size bed. He'd left the place polished and square 2 days previously, as soon as he got his orders to report for duty, as he knew there was a chance Kaylee and Ryan would need to use it in the coming weeks. But never this soon, and never under these circumstances. Kaylee alone and Ryan. Jesus. He couldn't believe Ryan was dead. He zoned out for a second, staring down at Kaylee huddled on the bed, and the full immensity of her circumstances hid him now. A cough outside the window snapped him to, and he looked out to see Patterson pissing his name in the dirt. "Patterson, get the fuck out of there. What are you doing?"
"Sorry, sir. Go reconnect the comms."
"You mean they've been off? I wondered why it was so quiet." Patterson's voice faded out as he walked back alongside the double-wide to the Humvee. The trailer had a freestanding, curved, corrugated steel roof running its full length, which the old lady had told him was to protect the trailer from stones that got themselves dislodged and fell off the cliffside. But Chris could also see how the roof would keep the trailer cooler during the heat of the summer and make it quieter in the rain. He could also see the dents where falling rocks had been safely diverted off to the side, leaving the trailer unscathed. The lady had also put bars on the windows, she said, to keep the boogers out, which he presumed was her old-worldly term for would-be thieves and perverts, and he was glad for these now, knowing he'd be leaving a very pregnant, very vulnerable Kaylee here all on her lonesome. What the fuck was he going to do with her? He'd already used up his unofficial 3-hour leave of absence to get her here, but how could she possibly be safe, alone, without Ryan? He knelt beside her and moved his face in close to hers. "Listen, Kay, I have to go now or they're going to hand me my ass. Can you hear me, Kay?" He could see her nodding slightly from beneath the blanket. "Can I ask you a couple of things?" She nodded again. "Okay." Chris psyched himself up for any possible hysterical reaction. "Do you remember what happened? Do you remember what happened this morning?" Kaylee didn't move. "Kaylee, do you remember what happened this morning at your apartment?" Chris waited and was about to ask again when Kaylee suddenly nodded an affirmation. "Are you sure? Do you remember everything?" Another nod from within the blanket. "Okay, I can't see your face, but that's a yes, right?" Kaylee nodded and uttered a feeble, "Yeah." "So, I'll be back in town tonight and I'll pick up Ryan and Finn, okay?" he said in the softest, non-army voice he could muster. And his heart was breaking for her. but he was still himself in shock from the visual of finding them earlier, and for the fact that Ryan was actually deceased. It was almost too much to grasp, and he felt now that the burden of her well-being and the baby's fell firmly on him. And it was a dreadful weight. His little sister, whom he'd always looked out for whom he'd been so happy when she married Ryan, a genuinely good guy, a good provider, and capable of keeping them safe, was now gone, and the reality of the returned responsibility was overwhelming. How was he going to handle this? Being once again active duty, and who knows what was heading down the river in this unfolding crisis. Jesus, it might even be the beginnings of a civil war, and it could be weeks before he could steal another window to get up here from Fort Lewis. Chris pulled the two IDs from his BDUs and slipped them under the blanket to Kaylee. "I'm so sorry to ask this," he whispered, "but you need to look at these. Just tell me if you know these guys, yes or no, that's all." All was quiet from within for a moment, then Kaylee moved to lift an edge of the blanket, allowing enough light in to examine the driver's licenses. Another pause, and then almost a gasp. "It's Randy Wheeler," she said. "The other I don't know." "Randy Wheeler?" Chris asked, not recognizing the name. "Ryan's ex-partner," she replied. A chill came over Chris. Fuck me, a revenge killing, he thought. He recalled the story now, or at least how Ryan and Kaylee had related, how this guy was a mooch and never carried his weight and was finally caught spending company funds on personal shit. So Ryan hired a lawyer and booted him out, then went on to make big profits. Of course, the guy would be bitter. Mooches always are, as they wrestle their sense of being wronged, and society never allows them their rightful justice, so they fester. But then, out of the blue, this week, society opens a window in which he could exact his smoldering grudge. It's how all genocides begin, and there you have it, the baptismal act of what they could all now look forward to. Chris leaned in close to whisper. "And Ryan shot him, and the other guy, with the Kel-Tec, right?" Chris concluded. "No. No," Kaylee whispered after a lingering pause. "I did." Patterson was walking around the small front yard, holding his phone in the air, looking for bars, a cigarette hanging precipitously from his lips. "You are such a fucking Carl," Chris shouted as he came out the door. Patterson dropped his arms, feigning offense, and repocketed his phone. "Wi-Fi's still down, sir." "No shit, Carl," Chris fired back as he let out an involuntary chuckle. He actually liked this turd. "Saddle up, Patterson." "Sir, they want us down south of Route 2, patrolling north of Redmond." Chris nodded. "But don't you worry, sir. I know where we're going," Patterson added. "Jump in, I'll give you a ride." "Huh. Yeah, he was gonna like this turd," Chris concluded as he climbed in. Patterson was a funny guy, and he figured he'd probably need some funny right about now. "They give you a hard time about the comms?" Chris asked. "Oh, yep. I got my first Alpha Charlie. But I just told him straight up we was dealing with some gnarly shit up here, and you was chasing a naked perp with an AR through the woods, and you were gonna give it to him good." "You told him just like that, huh?" "Yes, sir." "Hey, is your sis gonna be all right, sir?" he added as he spun the Humvee around and back down the dirt road towards May Creek Road. "Yeah," Chris nodded, relieved. "Yeah, I think she'll be all right."